InvestTalk is brought to you today by Health IQ. People who work out and eat healthy shouldn't have to pay as much for life insurance. That's the whole idea behind Health IQ. If you're a Health IQ customer, you could save up to 33% on your life insurance premium. How do you find out more about it? To see if you qualify, get your free quote today at healthiq.com/invest or mention the promo code INVEST when you talk to a Health IQ agent. This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to our April 16th, 2018. Edition of Invest Talk, and as always, this is our roundtable type discussion about managing your money, making better financial decisions, and we talk about managing risk and finding investing opportunities and honing in on the right approach to helping make your assets grow and reach your financial goals. Now, here's the understatement of the tax season. No one likes being audited by the IRS, and I think most people would choose a root canal over an audit, most likely. Both can really ruin your day, ruin your week, ruin your year, really. But the audit is likely to have the longest lasting pain. And the bright spot in the discussion is that the IRS doesn't keep their reasons a secret. So what are the red flags that single out your tax return for an audit? So if you take the time to know how their system works, you can avoid the likelihood of being audited. And if you do get sent to the audit dungeon, how can you prove best to defend yourself? We're going to talk a little bit about that later. But first, let's get to work answering your questions. These are the questions that came in before the show that were brought to us between programs. So I'm open to any money questions now at 888-99-CHART. You can call our live 4 to 5 Pacific time show, or you can just leave your message after hours and we'll answer it on the next show.
Well, hi, Steve or Justin. This is Bob from New Jersey. Love the podcast. I had a quick question. I have two UTMA accounts, custodial accounts, through Vanguard. One is for my niece, and one is for my daughter. My daughter's 7. My niece just turned 18. I just wanted to see, both accounts are a couple years old, and is there any tax implications? Should I be presenting this to my accountant every single year? They're both invested in total stock market index, so both same investments, but my niece is 18 now. I'm not really sure what tax implications are involved. It should be reported to the IRS as capital gains or not. If you could help me out in any way, I'd appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Yeah, that's a great question. UTMA accounts, college savings, it's a type of college savings account. There should be no tax implications on a yearly basis. When you make withdrawals, there might be some things that prove that they are education related, so that's something you might have to consider, but there shouldn't be anything on an annual basis that you really need to worry about, kind of like an IRA or any tax deferred account. Unless you're making additions or withdrawals, there's not much really to report to the IRS, or unless you put in some things like master limited partnerships, sometimes those can cause some unneeded tax implications, but in general, if you're kind of in an index fund like you are, shouldn't be too much to worry about. Always talk to your CPA though, that's for sure, because we aren't tax professionals. Now, if you've already mailed in your 27 tax return, then the suggestions I'm about to give to you might be a little too late, but think about them for next year. So let's try to answer the burning questions. How does the IRS choose returns to be audited? They use three techniques when selecting return or selecting audits. And there's a lot of, sometimes it's very random and you can't really avoid that. But there are also some red flags that will tip their hat to you maybe being a little too aggressive. Sorry. And one thing is if your records don't match the documents they have on file. Okay. So if you have a brokerage account, you have a taxable account, you have money coming out of an IRA or something like that, out of a 401k, those things are reported to the IRS. Okay, and that's why you get a 1099, that's why you get these statements from your broker every year saying, you know, giving a summary of your account and the taxable events that happen in your account, such as income, right? That's why most people get 1099s. You get capital gains income, dividend income, interest income on bonds, things like that that are reported on that. And the IRS knows that, right? The IRS gets a copy of that. It's on their records. So if you don't report that on your taxes, that is a red flag. They're going to ask you why you didn't report it and probably say you need to pay tax and possibly interest and penalties as well if you go too long not reporting it. Also, don't guess, okay? Some people might round to the $100, you know, say my income from this investment was $1,200 when it was really $1,232. Well, the IRS doesn't like you rounding. They want to know what the dollar amount was. Okay? So be aware of that. What else? If you take too big of deductions. Now, the IRS knows that there's a certain dollar amount based on your tax bracket that is typical for somebody in your income bracket. And if you are rising above that threshold, the odds are pretty good that that's going to be a red flag for the IRS to audit you. Okay, so be aware of that. Aware that, yes, while, you know, I would recommend it's usually probably better to be more aggressive and be deducting as much as you can, what legally. If you start being egregious and doing too much and counting things that, counting maybe too many things that are in that gray area, then you're probably giving the IRS a reason to audit you. Now, if you'd like to know more details, there are many to go over. Just go to law.freeadvice.com. It's a good place to see the list of potential red flags for an IRS audit. Now, we have other topics on the table as well. We're going to spend a few minutes today talking about, should you move ahead with a reverse mortgage? This is something that you should have on the table as a tool for you in retirement. I also have some other topics to discuss. One is retail sales. Retail sales. That came out today for the month of March, and there were some revisions to the first 2 months of the year as well. So it kind of gives you a good snapshot of the quarter for retail sales in the first quarter, and that is a big reflection of what GDP is likely to be for the first quarter as well. And then IRS myths, 10 myths about IRA myths. So we're going to talk about IRA myths that a lot of people think that maybe aren't true. And then lastly, what should you be focusing on when it comes to the bond market? And I talk about the bond market being the smartest market out there, and why you need to pay attention to it even more really than the equity markets. But it should be something that was always on your mind. And where are we today in the bond market? Is it signaling a risk off scenario going forward, or maybe a recession going forward, or are we there, you know, are we not quite there yet? So we're going to talk about that, in those indications, and what you should be looking at over the next, I mean, really every time, every week, every month, but even more so in times like this with the Fed and central banks tightening globally. 888-99 chart, 888-992-4278. Let's take a look at the market today. We had the Dow up 212 points, the NASDAQ was up 50 points, and the S&P was up 21 points. So a modest up day, about 0.7%, 0.8%, something like that. It was a good day. A lot of this has to do with the bombings over the weekend in Syria. There wasn't really a lot of pushback. There wasn't really a lot of conflict. There were some bombings. They bombed some places in Syria, tried to send a message to Assad, and that's really was it. And so the market sold off on Friday, I think, in anticipation of some major conflict starting, and it looks like that's pretty much all they're going to do for the time being. And so the market kind of rallied on that particular news. Overall, once again, we still remain in kind of a choppy, range-bound, bearish consolidation overall market that is likely going to break to the downside at some point, unless we start to break above the February highs, which we still have not done yet for most of the major indexes. After hours, we had good earnings from Netflix, which will probably buoy the NASDAQ tomorrow. But overall, once again, most rallies are still, while we're still below major moving averages, we should be skeptical of any major rally. So continue, even though with this small rally on the day today. Now, this is Invest Talk. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein. If you get into a conflict with the IRS, they reject your response to them, the best advice would be to contact an attorney or a tax experienced advisor in dealing with IRS problems. If you've already filed your returns and want to move on, let's talk about another money matter. I want to hear from you. Anything that's on your mind, give me a call, 888-99-CHART. It's how to get through right now.
Now let's get back to Invest Talk. Answers to life's important money questions. Our direct line is 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to Rush in Berkeley. How you doing, Rush?
Good, Justin. Hey, thanks for taking my call. Love your show.
Appreciate it. What can I do for you?
Thank you. Hey, question on Blue Apron, APRN. Mm-hmm. Love the company. Mm-hmm. They've been beaten up bad recently. I know they have an earnings call coming out, I think, on May 3rd. Was wondering if you could just take a look as a swing and as a long-term trade.
Okay. I've used the Blue Apron before as their service. Is that just your experience? You like the service and you think this is a name that you're buying based on that?
Yeah, I mean, anecdotally, I love the product. I know a lot of people that use it, they've above other products. Mm-hmm. I've studied the company a little bit. I think they have a really good distribution system set up, some good leadership, and just wanted to get your thoughts in general. I mean, I know it's a pretty crowded space, but I think there's a lot of potential there, and maybe even as a potential buyout in the future. But I just wanted to get your professional opinion, just looking at it going forward, both fundamentally and technically for like a swing trade or as a longer term hold.
Yeah, well, this is a name that went IPO back last year in, it looks like about the third quarter of last year. It went IPO's IPO price, $10 a share, and it's pretty much gone down ever since. It never really had that, had a short-term spike in the first day or two of trading, and it's pretty much traded below that ever since. Now we're trading at $2.04 a share. Now, 2016, they lost $1.59. 2017, they lost $3.10. This year, they're supposed to only lose 71 cents and then lose 44 cents next year. So it's a company certainly in a growth phase and burning capital to do so. And in many times or sometimes, that's an okay thing to do by building market share and getting people engaged in the idea of whatever their business is. And in this case, it's having deliveries of their food and recipes to the door. My problem is the growth story has faded dramatically. Revenues are down 13% year over year. So I don't like the name. They're not making money. I don't think it's a profitable business model. And I'm just, I actually think they're one of the, they could be delisted because of how poorly they've done. So I would not be buying Blue Apron.
InvestTalk continues now, a service of KPP Financial. To build a solid foundation for your retirement strategy, you need to confront risk. Take the 3-minute quiz, the risk analysis quiz, on investtalk.com. And now's the time to bring your money question to the table, 888-99-CHART.
That's how you get through and ask your question on today's show. We have about a half hour left, so get your call in soon. Let's talk a little bit about reverse mortgages. What is a reverse mortgage? Let's start with that. Now, unlike a traditional mortgage where a home buyer borrows money and makes payments to the lender over a certain time period, a reverse mortgage is the exact opposite, where the lender is paying you in exchange for equity in your home. Now, who can get a reverse mortgage? That's one big restriction. There's actually four. One is you need to be at least 62 years old. These are designed for retirements. Okay, this is designed for somebody who is retiring, even if you aren't retired yet, that's still what it's designed for. So you have to be at least 62 years old. Your home must conform to HUD standards, and this means that co-ops and buildings with more than 4 housing units are ineligible, as are manufacturing homes built before July 1976. So condos aren't really meant for this, okay? It should be a single family home typically. Now, the equity in your home must be sufficient as well to justify the reverse mortgage. Typically, you have to have at least 50% equity in your home in order to even think about getting a reverse mortgage. So if your home's worth $400,000 and you have $300,000 in debt, the odds of you getting a reverse mortgage are fairly low. Now, the reverse mortgage lender must be the first lien holder as well. So you have to pay off any existing loan with the proceeds from reverse mortgage. So say a house is worth $500,000, you owe $100,000 on it, and you want to take a reverse mortgage out for, say, $250,000. You're going to have to pay off that $100,000 first, and then you can take the reverse mortgage, and you'll get that $150,000 difference. So those are kind of the four caveats to who can get a reverse mortgage. Now, how do they work? And there's different ways that you can be paid out. There's about 6 different ways. One is equal monthly payments for as long as one borrower continues to live in the property. So for basically your life, that's the biggest benefit, I think, of a reverse mortgage, is that you do this loan where you can get a fixed payment to you every month for as long as you live in the home. Now, if you move to a nursing home and you're older age, I think it's 6 months that you're not in the home, that's considered you moving out of the property. So that's something to consider as well. And then you're going to be forced to sell the property. So be aware of that. Then there's a term. So it could be equal payments for a fixed number of months. So we've, $5,000 for 5 years, 60 months, and $5,000 every month. Could be that. Then there's a line of credits, very similar to a HELOC. And then if you can borrow money against your home whenever you want, and you don't have to make payments, right? In a home equity line of credits, you have a minimum payment that you got to pay, usually interest only for the first 5 years, but you won't have to make those monthly payments when you take money out or equity out of your home. Then there's modified tenure, a combination of line of credit and the 10-year option, meaning that you get monthly payments, but you could also borrow more on top of that if needed. Then there's modified term, a combination of line of credit and the term option. So you're getting those monthly payments over a certain time period, as well as being able to borrow on top of that if needed. And then there's a single disbursement lump sum, meaning you just get a big payout today and you don't really get anything in the future, right? So you may say your home's paid off and you have a home worth $500,000. You borrow $250,000 from the home equity line of credit, or the reverse mortgage, and you get a lump sum, $250,000. Interest starts accumulating right then on that $250,000, but you're at least getting that lump sum right up front. Now, that's kind of the big negative, right? That as soon as you start borrowing money, that's when you start accumulating that interest, as well as mortgage insurance as well that you have to pay. And you still have to pay taxes on your home. You still have to pay insurance on your home. All those things are still required. So be aware of that. Now, what does this look like from a tax implication? We are in tax season. Well, it is not considered taxable income. What it is considered to the IRS is a loan advance. But you can't deduct the interest charged on that reverse mortgage like you can with a traditional mortgage, because the interest isn't deductible actually until it is paid, until you pay the interest. So if it's just accumulating, you haven't paid it, then you can't write it off. The mortgage interest premium, insurance premiums are deducted, however, if you itemize. So that's one thing to consider. The biggest drawback, I think, is costs. A typical reverse mortgage costs about $11,000 per $100,000 that you borrow. So they're very high fees, and that's why we always say these are last resort vehicles. You always want to have your home paid off by the time you retire, but you only use this as a last resort. So what's coming up on the next Invest Talk? Competitive returns with socially responsible stocks. That will be one of the topics on Invest Talk on Tuesday. Now we're here to answer your questions. Any money topics, I want to hear from you.
We'll continue with Invest Talk next. But first a question, do good drivers usually pay less for car insurance? Of course they do. So shouldn't the same thing apply to life insurance? Well, that's the whole idea behind Health IQ. Health IQ can save customers up to a third on life insurance, up to 33%. Well, here are the facts. Physically active people have a 56% lower risk of heart disease, 20% lower risk of cancer, and a 58% lower risk of diabetes. So here's another reward for staying fit: lower insurance rates. InvestTalk is sponsored by Health IQ, an insurance company that helps health-conscious people like runners, cyclists, vegetarians get lower rates on their life insurance. Go to healthiq.com/invest to see if you qualify. That's healthiq.com/invest. Or mention the promo code INVEST so they'll know you're an Invest Talk listener when you talk with a Health IQ agent. This is Invest Talk. It's a two-way conversation, you know. And even if you're a podcast listener, you can speak live with Justin or Steve. Just call between 4 and 5 p.m. Pacific time. And we're open to any money question. The number is 888-99-CHART.
Hello, this is Joey in Texas, looking at Intravision Communications Corp., ticker symbol EVC. It's a microcap stock. It caters multimedia and entertainment and advertising to the Hispanic community. And I was curious about it because I was looking at the income on the balance sheets for this year. I'm not real good at, you know, reading balance sheets and things like that, but they had a real large spike in 2017 of cash. And I was curious if maybe you could take a look at that and see what that was. Was it an acquisition? Was it some, you know, taxing or accounting thing that they might have done to increase those numbers? But curious if it would be a decent long-term hold setting where it is, or if there was some other point where it would be better to get into it. The chart, they're well below their 50 and 200-day moving average, and depending on what it does in the next few days, whether this may be a bottom or not. But anyway, just curious about your thoughts and what you think may have been the reason for that large spike in cash in 2017. Thanks.
All right, he's looking at Entravision Communications. EVC is the symbol. This is a U.S. Spanish language media company with 54 TV stations, 38 FM, and 11 AM radio stations in seven states and Washington, D.C. The market cap is $332 million, so certainly a small cap name. And what he's talking about, and if you're watching our YouTube live stream currently, you will see that in the third quarter of last year, you saw revenues spike dramatically as well as earnings spike dramatically. Now, I'm seeing that late last year, they recorded a $3 million gain on debt extinguishment. That could be it. That's part of it. That would be the fourth quarter. I'm really not sure why this exactly had it. I've looked into it before, but I totally am blanking on exactly why. Shoot me an email on investtalk.com, and I can give you a little more details on what that was. But it was certainly a one-time spike, as earnings for 2017 were $1.92. This year, they're only supposed to be 21 cents and 38 cents next year. That doesn't mean it's not cheap. It is. It's still a relatively cheap name. Even on 38 cents next year, you're talking about a PE somewhere in the 20s. Not too bad. In the teens. So definitely still relatively cheap. Return equity is 66%. Very, very positive. And I like the fact that they don't have a ton of debt. Free cash flow is a little bit negative. That's something that I don't like. Yield's about 4%, but their cash flow from operations is about $300 million on a market cap of $452 million. That's pretty strong. I like the name. I'm a fan of it. I think it's relatively undervalued. You do have that one-time event that does skew it, make it look ultra cheap. It isn't ultra cheap, but it certainly is undervalued, and I like EVC down here around the $5 level. So that was Entravision Communications. EVC is the symbol. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So you get through and ask your question on today's show. We have about 20 minutes left, so get your call in. Now, let's talk a little bit about retail sales. Remember, consumers account for roughly 70% of economic activity here in America. So retail sales reports tend to be very impactful to not only the GDP figures for the quarter, but just the health indication of the health of the U.S. consumer in general. So retail sales rose 0.6% in March, and that was after three straight declines in retail sales from December, January, and February. Now, economists were expecting about a 0.4% increase in sales, so definitely better than expected. But you saw the February number, which was at negative 0.1%, that stayed the same, but the January drop actually was increased from negative 0.1% to negative 0.2%. So that 0.2% surprise in the upside was actually met with a 0.1% disappointment on that January number that was revised down. Now, why was March better than expected? One was auto dealers had their best month since September. I've talked recently about how auto companies are kind of having trouble because of the glut of used cars out there. Used car prices are dropping. Therefore, the demand for new cars is lower because the cost to lease has been higher. And the competitiveness of used cars versus new has suddenly become a lot more attractive. So it's a lot harder for convincing people to pay up for a new car versus just going out there and buying a slightly used car, something that came off lease recently. So auto dealers had a little bit of a rebound. Their sales rose 2%. Nothing dramatic, but definitely the best month since September. And 2% is the best month since September. Just shows you how poor the past 6 months or so have been for the auto sector. internet retailers, pharmacies, and stores like that sell home furnishings were also big winners. The weakness was in home centers, apparel outlets, and department stores. They saw sales drop. So like I said, this won't really help much for first quarter GDP numbers, but it does suggest that the recent lull in consumer spending might be picking up a little bit, although it's not. 1 month, once again, isn't going to change a trend dramatically. Overall, the consumer has shifted down some their spending habits, and this is just a slight positive outlook on the end of the quarter. But the GDP for the first quarter is likely to going to come in probably sub 2%. I know Trump likes to tout that the economy is roaring on all cylinders, but really the economic figures aren't showing that. We're kind of where we've been over the past 3, 4, 5 years or so in an economy that is solid, not great, not terrible, but just kind of mulling along around that 2% GDP growth number. Now, January, a lot of times in the recent past, has been weaker than most of the year, so don't think that that 1.8, 1.9% number that's kind of projected right now is that bad. It's just kind of typical for the first quarter and just the way these numbers kind of come out. So overall, the economy hasn't shifted up or down in a dramatic fashion. It's just kind of bouncing around very similar to where we've been over the past 3 to 5 years. Now, April is Financial Literacy Month, and Steve and I are drawing your attention to some books that can help you in your search for more financial knowledge, which is why we're all here, right? Is more financial knowledge, and you always want to be learning. Now, today's book is about technical analysis, and it's called The Technical Analysis of the Financial Markets, A Comprehensive Guide to Trading Methods and Applications. The author is John Murphy, and he's updated this bestseller, and from it'll teach you how to read charts to understanding indicators and crucial role technical analysis plays in investing. And this is an overview of the whole field of technical analysis. And it focuses on futures markets, but a lot of the takeaways you can apply to really any market. You know, patterns, volume, indicators, that really applies to almost any market that you can chart. So you can see more about that on investtalk.com, or if you want to just see the books that we recommend, just go to investtalk.com and to click on the InvestTalk tab and then books.
A reminder, Steve will be in San Jose next month for portfolio reviews. The date is May 2nd. Maybe it's time to push the reset button to start fresh. One of the services we provide to a limited number of our listeners is a free checkup. And if you're not within range of our California offices, Steve and Justin meet via Skype and telephone. It's easy to arrange. Just go to investtalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab and then Portfolio Review.
Hi, I'm a neophyte to investing, and I recently read about the Buffett indicator and applying that indicator to countries worldwide. I came up with a list of 4 countries, Poland, Peru, Montenegro, and Nepal, and I did find an ETF for the country of Peru that I was interested in, EPU, E as in Edward, P as in Peter, U as in umbrella. So I wanted to know if you could give me an analysis of that ETF fund. Thanks.
I think we did this call recently, but I'll reiterate kind of my take on Peru. I like the Buffett indicator, which you're talking about, which is the market cap to GDP ratio. And Peru and South America in general is probably one of the cheaper markets in relation to the Buffett indicator out there in the market. In Peru, the EPU ETF is pretty concentrated into a big financial company, which worries me a little bit. I would probably rather dig a little deeper and find the companies within this particular index, and you can go to Morningstar.com and get a lot of information on the top 5 holdings, and you can probably even dig deeper into on the internet and find the top maybe 50 holdings within this name and see which ones are listed here in America. Probably even just Google Peru ADRs, and you'll probably be able to find those, and you'll be able to find probably a better name with the specific companies within this index, as opposed to being over leveraged to that one financial company. Believe the name, what was it? Yeah, Credit Corp, which I know is traded here in America. There's also Southern Copper Company that's also traded here in America. Buena Ventures Mining, that's another one traded here in America. And those three account for roughly 45% of the overall index. While I like what you're looking at, I'm more bigger fan of buying individual names that are undervalued and have some sort of growth driver that is going to propel their stock higher, as well as maybe ride the indexes higher if the Buffett indicator is an indicator that things overall in the country are undervalued. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. That's how you get through and ask your question on today's show. Let's talk a little bit about the credit markets and why they are important. I talk about this regularly, and this is an area that you really need to understand. If you're going to invest in the markets, you really need to understand why the bond market is more important, or the most important market that you need to consider. And the first thing I need to point out to you is that the credit markets are 7 times larger than the stock market. Yes, 7 times larger. And not only that, but the players within the bond market are also much larger. They are more educated about the economy, about companies, about sectors, about governments. And they do a lot more research because there's a lot more scrutiny from them, because they need to prove to their investors, right? It might be a mutual fund, it might be a pension, that they are doing due diligence on the investments they're investing in. Now, one big indicator that can help you figure out where bond investors are allocating capital is credit spreads. And this is the difference between the safest securities out there, as well in relation to the difference in yield, sorry, of the safest securities, such as treasuries, and the lowest quality securities out there, which would be investment grade or below investment grade corporate debt. And if that number is rising, it means that these large investors are taking money out of the riskier debt and put it into safer debt. And this typically rises before a recession, because the bond market is seeing it. The bond market is paying it more attention than the equity markets typically. Now, the spread, which was 184 basis points in early February, meaning 1.84%, has now gone up to about 200 basis points to a full 2%, which isn't a huge deal, but it is showing that the bond market is starting to worry. Now, when should it be a worry for you? That's probably when you get to about 2.25, 2.5%. That's when that yield is suddenly, instead of just being in a downtrend, which still remains in a downtrend, is starting to break out to the upside. And that, my friends, is when you need to worry about a more protracted downturn in the market and a bear market. Let's go to Jack in San Diego. How you doing, Jack?
Hi, Justin. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for making it.
So I recently took a very small position in a solar company. Thinking about picking up some more, and I just wanted to get your take on it. The company is Solar Edge at Sierra Echo Delta Golf. Just wanted to hear your thoughts.
Okay. It's a Solar Edge Technologies, SEDG is the symbol. This is an Israeli-based maker of optimized inverters, solar power harvesting, and PV monitoring solutions. Can you tell me quickly a little bit about what you like about this name and why you took a position?
Sure. I've been looking to get into solar and did a little bit of research on the kind of technology that they've got going on. Seems to, in my opinion, to be a pretty decent moat. And I just was a little bit hesitant before I got kind of another opinion before increasing the size of my position.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break, and after the break, I'll give you my opinion on this company. Give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
Let's get back to your calls on InvestTalk for this Monday, April 16th. More and more investors are looking to put their money where their values are. Competitive returns with socially responsible stocks? That's next time. You have a question now for Justin? 888-99-CHART is how to reach him on InvestTalk.
All right, now we are back with Jack, and he's looking at Solar Edge Technologies. And are you watching on YouTube, Jack?
Yeah, I'm watching live on YouTube right now.
Okay, there you go. So you can see my screen. You can see that Solar Edge is definitely a grower. They were losing money from 2011 to 2014. Now they're supposed to make almost $3 a share this year, about $3.13 next year, which isn't huge growth, but definitely on the right trajectory. Revenues are up 70% year over year. Earnings are up 166% year over year. Very minimal, if no debt at all, which I like. And what it looks like for me is the company consists of power, authorized inverters, and cloud-based monitoring platforms. It deploys power optimizers at each solar module to enable a better systems, I'm assuming, right? Is that what you've kind of researched for this company?
It is, yeah. That's what I came up with.
And is this a proprietary technology they have a patent on, or is this just how they build their modules?
Not sure if they have a patent, but just I've researched a few other companies, and they're not able to perform the same function that their solar panels can do as far as like the angle at which they're able to store the energy, which I thought gave them a pretty good advantage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man, I like what you're looking at. I like the fact that you're looking at a company that's trying to create that competitive advantage of how do you make solar systems more efficient and more effective. And if that can become, say, the industry standard and they have, say, a patent on it, then I think you have something here. I really need to look into, do they have a patent on that? Or are they just kind of the first movers to use that particular strategy in building their systems? And is it easily replicated? Because, you know, typically when a certain player in an industry starts to have success with building a product or a service in a certain manner and that catches on, they get copied very quickly. And I would really like to find out if they have a patent on the way their systems are built and that efficiency that creates. So that's important to me. One thing I really like is the trajectory of the business. You have right now you're looking at a few figures. One is return on equity, which is at about 25%, and that's come down from where it IPO'd back in 2015, but that's still a pretty high level, which I like. You also have gross margins that are at 35%, and that's trended a little higher from where they were at an IPO around 20%. So that's continued to trend higher. I like that as well. Its cash from operations is now at an all-time high, as well as its free cash flow, all doing very well. Now, from a ratio standpoint, it's still relatively overvalued, but if it can continue this growth momentum, I think it will definitely grow into this valuation. My caveat, once again, is their advantage defensible? Do they have a patent on it? Or is this something that the next solar company is going to look at and say, they're doing it this way, they're building it that way, we're going to put R&D into building our systems that way, and we're just going to compete, and suddenly that becomes the industry standard, and they're kind of now left just fighting everybody else and another player in the game. So I really want to know whether that is proprietary to them, or it's just they're the first ones to kind of commercialize that technique. Does that make sense, Jack?
It really does, yeah. That's something I've really got to research. But, yeah, no, I really appreciate the feedback.
No problem, Jack. Thanks for the call. That was Solar Edge Technologies. I know I'm definitely going to look into it. SEDG is the symbol. Thanks for calling. 888-99-CHART. I know we're running out of time, so I'm going to get quickly to some myths about IRAs. 10 myths. This is a Morningstar article, which I think is a great source of information for a lot of different things. And there's a few that I want to highlight. But we don't have time. So I'm going to save this for tomorrow. So tune in tomorrow. I'll talk a little bit about maybe the 10 myths of IRA contributions, especially in taxes. Thanks for tuning in today. I hope you call in, call our number, 888-99-CHART, and leave your message. Ask whatever money questions you have, and we're going to answer it on tomorrow's show. Time to wrap it up. Thank you for tuning in. And for Steve Peasley and myself and everybody at KPP Financial, thank you for tuning in today. Let's do it again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein Pavlis Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is president and Justin Klein, chief executive officer of Klein Pavlis Peasley Financial. And they thank you for listening and welcome your comments or questions on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.